comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show this evening. We've got a great show lined up for you. As always, it is talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. It is the show where you matter. I am pleased to be able to announce we are back in good technological health here at the Kevin Smith Show. Those of you who tried so desperately last week to listen know that I was trying so desperately last week to broadcast. It was difficult because we had the main computer in our network died. I won't go into all the stuff I had to do to patch things together and be able to broadcast, but I can tell you it was tough, and I am absolutely pleased that we've got things back in running order. It's going to get better yet because it does take three computers to do what we do, and one of the computers died last year, and so we've been doing this with just two computers. It will be much better when the third one arrives, and it will be on its way to us soon. So things will be much, much better. Flash messages. Now, last week I was unable to read your flash messages because the flash message system where it pops up on my screen, that was on the main computer that died. But we've got that back up and installed on the replacement computer, and things will be back to normal here tonight, I hope. By the way, I also hope, speaking of hope, I hope that all of our members have watched my vlog that was in the members area. Now, it's going to be up there another day or two, but then we'll take it down. It does contain some very important information, so be sure you take the time to get over there and watch the vlog, okay? And I put information about that in the K-Files this week, and so you should know about that. Now, tonight we're going to be talking about energy vortex, or the plural of that, energy vortices. And whenever I say that, I know there are some folks whose eyes just sort of roll back in their head and they kind of tune out, and it's because they think that what we're going to be talking about is something that's new age or woo-woo, and I understand where you're coming from with that. Believe me, I do. I am a very non-woo-woo kind of person, as you know. But that's not what we're going to be talking about here tonight. We are talking about energy vortices, but we're going to be talking about energy vortices that are real. Real energy vortices, not imagined. Energy vortices that have been verified by scientific measurement instruments to exist, and in some cases they've been measured. And we're going to be looking into the fact that, first of all, they do exist, and second, third, and fourth, why do they exist? What causes them to exist? Furthermore, what do they cause? We'll be back right after this. welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Just as I told you that everything appears to be wonderful technologically here tonight, we went to break, and I can hear the fan on the main graphics card on the TV computer starting to groan and moan over there. You may hear it during the show. So... And it's a fairly new video card, fairly new graphics card. My guest this evening is Jerry Wills. And, Jerry, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Hello, Kevin. Hello, everyone.
Jerry, I'm just a little bit curious. Can you hear that fan groaning and moaning in the background?
I thought that was my stomach.
We do have a replacement graphics card if that one goes, but I won't be able to replace it if it goes during the show. But, you know, that really is pretty typical when you open up a computer and do surgery. Sometimes things that are kind of on the edge of failing go ahead and begin to fail then, you know, pretty rapidly. Anyway... Jerry, I invited you to be back on the show with me this evening to talk about these energy vortices, and you know, we briefly discussed the whole idea of these energy vortices, just in very general and very brief terms, maybe for 3 or 4 minutes. The reason I wanted you back here is because you're the one person that I know who has been into one of these energy vortices. I've heard a lot of people talk about stepping into an energy vortex. I don't know them personally. You, I know personally, and I trust what you say when you tell us about having entered into this energy vortex or doorway or whatever it is, wormhole, whatever it is, at that doorway of Aramuru down in Peru. And I know for a lot of folks, when we talk about an energy vortex, as I stated at the beginning of the show, a lot of people, their eyes just kind of roll back in their head and they go, oh boy, here we go, some more New Age stuff or some more woo-woo stuff. And that's really not... Look, that true. All of that stuff does exist around the subject. But that's not what we're going to look at here tonight. What I want us to look at is what bits of reality we can identify, and then we know that these vortexes exist because they've been verified with scientific instruments, some of them, and the questions then are, why do they exist, what causes them, and what do they cause, and then, you know, where are some of these that have been verified? Now, down at in Peru at the doorway, share with us just briefly a thumbnail of your experience of stepping through that doorway.
Well, it was an experience where I started making the tones, and it felt as though I was falling forward, kind of like if you were in a dream and dreaming that you were falling. It was that same exact kind of feeling. It took you over very rapidly and was a real strange sensation. Before that, and in the making of part of the video that we have up on Expeditions TV, we, myself and Kathy and the other group of folks that was with us there, I noticed everyone was swaying, and I noticed I felt kind of like off balance all the time as well. And what we noticed eventually is that there was a wave of energy that was moving outward from that doorway, at least from the direction of the doorway, and it was pushing us backwards, kind of like if you were standing in a tidal pool. And when I mentioned it to everyone, I said, pay attention to this. I mean, I see you guys are moving. Close your eyes and just stand here for a second. And they couldn't even stand up. They were dodging off left and right, and I can't explain what's going on. So, you know, the energy at that doorway, it's quite powerful. And this was before the sun ever went down. So it was pretty powerful. And that's the kind of effect that I would expect, I suppose, if I were around something that was as profound as that doorway is there in southern Peru. We've been to a couple other locations and noticed similar effects, one of them being at that archway in southern Arizona, and then the other is at Markawasi, which I believe there must be one up there as well because of the things that happened. We haven't really located exactly where, but anyway, the same kind of effect takes place up there periodically.
Okay, now you talked about how at this doorway you have to make a series of vocal tones and in order to activate this doorway. And by the way, you're not the only person that's been on this show who has been to that doorway and who has talked about activating that doorway and actually going through it. You activated it, and you went through it, and you shared with us, and it's in our archives, you shared with us a really amazing account of what you saw and what you experienced. And in the case of this doorway, now I know, look, there are people who say, well, you know, that's just what he felt like he experienced. It didn't really happen. If it really had happened, everybody would have seen that he disappeared. And I think, I remember, people who were there saying on the show that they did notice that you disappeared.
Yeah, and when they were trying the doorway for themselves, they disappeared as well.
Now, folks, we know that that's very difficult for a lot of folks to believe, but if you're new to this show, you need to understand that I don't ask you to believe anything. I myself do not believe anything. I either know it, or if I don't know it, I say, I don't know. We have to have more investigation. But here's something we do know. We do know that we had callers to the show, and then we've had guests on the show that were there with Jerry who have testified on the air that what he has just told us about actually did happen. Also, over at Expeditions TV, that's Jerry's website, and if you click on his picture on my website, it will take you over to his website. Okay? You can see a video at his website where he's sitting in front of this doorway. It's a big stone thing and what looks like a doorway carved into the stone. And he's talking to you, and as he's talking to you, the camera's just sitting on a tripod, and it begins to have some effects that you can see as apparently some energy is interfering with the camera. Now, we'll talk more about other ways of verifying that energy exists at a spot. We'll do that in a moment. But, Jerry, tell us about that video and what we see in that video.
Well, it was something totally unexpected, and I've had one email out of the thousands that I've received from from a fellow that said, oh, well, you could do that in Photoshop. And yeah, I know exactly how to do it in Photoshop. I know how to do it in Final Cut Pro. The Final Cut Pro has another application called Color, and you can rotate that wheel around and make it change colors all you like. The problem with that is that's not what happened. The camera was actually being held by Kathy.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was on a tripod.
No, that's how steady she is. Anyway, she's holding the camera, filming me. Let me get this straight. Kathy was up above, so that would have been Henry Viejo that was holding the camera. Well, at any rate, he's holding the camera, and I'm talking, trying to describe best as I can in a documentary style way about the doorway, what I've experienced, and so forth. Now, we had taped the doorway, we had taped Tiwanaku, we had taped Buros Islands, just a whole bunch of different videos during that trip. I think it was three or four, maybe five. And when I got to the point where I was editing that footage, which was the very first one that I chose that I would work on, I thought maybe this new camera that we had bought had suddenly developed a strange problem. And I was really concerned that if that were the case, all of my footage was going to be screwed up. This periodic changing the color of the video is just not good. So now I was in a real flustered state, and I decided I was going to have to look at all the footage from the entire journey that we had taken. I checked all of it. There was not one instance where that occurred. And the reason why I think it occurred is because I made a couple of the tones in the doorway when I first sat down there and began doing the discussion. I didn't do the tones on camera because I just won't. But I did make a tone in there anyway, I think during the filming. I could feel the dizzying feeling while I was talking on camera. But it didn't occur to me it was affecting the camera, and of course that would be the best thing that you could expect is that you would get some kind of a response that you could actually show and say, look what we've got here. So that's what happened. I was sitting there talking, and the camera's rolling, and this aberration took place, and it has to have been some kind of a electromagnetic influence upon the camera to have caused it to do this.
All right. And we're going to come back also to this electromagnetic influence in a moment. In the course of the show, we'll come back to that. Now, I want to move on. We'll come back to all of this as time moves on here. Sure. But I want to move on and talk about some of the places where there's energy vortex, and these have been measured with scientific instruments. One of those places is Stonehenge, and I'm sure that a lot of folks in the audience have seen that documentary where they walk around Stonehenge with a meter measuring the electromagnetic field or pulse coming out of Stonehenge, and they identify several points where it's very strong, several points where it's weaker, but they're able to sort of identify the size of this vortex at Stonehenge using a meter that's measuring the energy. Another place is the Bosnian pyramids. Now, at the largest of the Bosnian pyramids, they did tests where they checked to see if there was any kind of energy, see if there was any kind of anything happening. And what they discovered is that on a regular basis, on a regular cycle, a burst of energy shoots right out the top of that pyramid. You don't see it with your eyes, but with a special camera, they were able to photograph it. And also, they were able to measure this with instruments. A similar thing happens at one of the pyramids in South America, one of the old Mayan pyramids in South America. And there's a photograph on the internet. I don't know if it's real or if it's hoaxed, but there's a photograph of a beam of energy coming straight up out of it. Have you seen that, Jerry?
Yeah, I did. I saw that. It was fascinating. That would be at Chichen Itza. That's in that's in Mexico, right off Yucatan. It's near Merida, which is near Cusco, Cancun.
I don't know if the photograph is real, but I did see a documentary where you had Richard Hoagland down there checking to see if there's any kind of using a watch and something else, I don't know. But anyway, they were checking with instruments to see if there was some sort of time displacement happening there. Tell us about that, if you know something about it.
Well, I don't know a lot about it. I remember watching the video, so I can relate to the audience what I remember seeing. And basically, he had one of these watches that uses the quartz and the tuning fork. That doesn't have, like, the digital circuitry in it that a lot of watches have these days. It was made by Bulova. And anyway, he had two of these, and he set one down at one location, and then he went and started going to the pyramid and then up the pyramid. And what he was theorizing is that if there is some energy here that is of an extraordinary nature, there might be time dilation. And as I recall, he showed that there was a slight amount of time dilation taking place at El Castillo and Chichen Itza.
So what would that indicate?
Well, that's a hard one to explain because, and I think that anyone who would try to explain it would be at a bit of a loss, but I think that what it would explain to some general terms is that the shape pyramid is collecting energy, and that energy is being re-radiated out and away from it, and because of the effect of that energy displacement, it's also causing a displacement in local time-space equation. So that at some point, the longer you stay there, the more energy this thing is exchanging, you're going to be losing seconds. And excuse me for a while.
All right.
Thank you. Maybe as much as minutes, hours, weeks. Who knows?
Okay. So, at Stonehenge, it has been detected with meters, with instruments, developed, of course, by scientists and engineers. It has been determined that there is a measurable energy field around Stonehenge.
Uh-huh.
It has also been determined, it has been measured at the Bosnian Pyramid. It has been determined, it has been measured at the, I believe you said El Castillo?
Yeah, El Castillo means the castle.
Yeah, in Chichen Itza.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, there are other places I know around the world, there are bound to be other places. But these are the ones we're most familiar with, and we'll be talking about them when we come back from this break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and my guest this evening, Jerry Wills. Jerry, when we went away for break, I had said that these sites, or these three sites that I've mentioned, Stonehenge, Bosnian Pyramid, Chichen Itza, and then the fourth site being the doorway, and I never can pronounce it right, but I'll give it a stab, Aramuru. And in Peru, these are places where we have some verifiable evidence that there is some type of energy emanating from them. In some cases, it's been photographed. In most of the cases, it has been measured with some type of instruments. So we're going to proceed with the idea that, okay, they exist. There's energy coming out of these places, and the first question that I'd like for us to address is why? Let's hold that till the last, and let's talk about what causes these energy vortices?
Well, that's going to be just guesswork on my part based on the best that I know. There are, of course, ley lines on the Earth, and these are lines of energy that are flowing from point A to point B. It's a large, large grid that covers the entire planet. If a person were to understand the layout of these lines, then they could calculate exactly where the greatest amount of energy might be released. And, of course, from there, you'd have to figure out what you're going to do with it.
Okay, but let me ask you this. Do you think that these are being caused by some type of normal, natural, geological processes? Or is this something that's as a result of technology that's been installed deep in the Earth by extraterrestrials at some ancient time in the past? Is it something spiritual? What do you think would be the base cause of these things?
Well, let me try to explain it. Back when I was a kid, I've always been into electronics. One of the first things that I did was I took a crystal and made a radio using a crystal and some wire. And I could listen to the local radio station with just this coil of wire wound around a toilet paper tube and the crystal. Now, the crystal is naturally occurring, so is the copper, actually, but it had been formed into a particular shape. Because I had knowledge, limited as it was at that time, I was only 8 years old, but because I had that knowledge, I was able to take something that's a naturally occurring thing, apply a level of technology to it, and then bring out what I was hoping to receive, which was a radio signal. Now, if you are looking at an advanced technological society, and I believe that these existed, you know, in excess of 13,000 years ago, and I really think they went back a few million years ago, actually, then what you have is you have an understanding, from their perspective anyway,
okay,
of taking something that's naturally occurring. Let's say it's the ley lines. Another thing is naturally occurring, which is darkness or light, and then applying a level of technology to it in order to achieve one of the results that you're looking for. And that's what I think these places are. They've taken technology and applied it to something naturally occurring. The rocks are naturally occurring that they built the pyramids out of, as well as Chichen Itza and the doorway. I mean, it's just a great big slab of millions of year old sandstone. It's just an upthrust sticking straight up. It used to be laying flat.
All right, so how would these people thousands and thousands of years ago, obviously they weren't walking around with meters in their hands, they weren't walking around with the technology that we use to measure and verify that these things exist out there. So how did they even know that there was some sort of energy outflow at some point on the Earth? How did they even know about that?
Well, that's really difficult to come to a conclusion about, because you don't know how long that culture existed. You don't know what level of sophistication they reached, but they obviously got to a point through experimentation that they were able to extrapolate that, given a much larger dynamic, they could do a much larger thing with it.
You know, it's really interesting. I used to be out in the Phoenix area, as you know, and I used to go out to South Mountain because I found it to be absolutely fascinating. And the South Mountain Park is a city park, and it's the largest municipal park on the planet. When you go into South Mountain Park, this thing is literally covered with petroglyphs chipped into rocks by ancient people. And one of the symbols that they chip into the rock is a spiral that shows an energy vortex, shows the location of an energy vortex. At least that is the interpretation that comes from the Native Americans in that area, as well as all over the United States. They say that that indicates an energy vortex, and if the spiral ends with the point of the line going down, it means this is a vortex coming up out of the earth, and it's a doorway into the earth. So it's energy coming out and a doorway down. If it ends with the end of that spiral pointed toward the sky, it's a vortex of energy coming out of the sky at this point, and it's a doorway from there upward. Now, I know there are people that think this is crazy, this is nonsense, and it's all New Age religion. This existed long before there was any such thing as New Age religion, folks. This existed thousands of years ago. And what's interesting, you might say, well, it was just their mythology. Okay, maybe it was, but you can take a meter to those places and measure, and there is a spike in energy right where they have it marked. And the question is, thousands of years ago, how did they know?
Well, the other thing too, Kevin, is that taking a stone and a stick, perhaps, or two stones, and sitting in the hot sun, chipping into volcanic rock in order to make a pretty decoration seems rather absurd.
So, you're saying that these are not just decorations, these have purpose?
I believe so, and I think that when the close of the last world occurred, there were people left over who had some level of sophistication. They kept passing it on to their children, generation to generation, pointing out specific features, pointing out things to look for. And though they didn't have the technological savvy that their ancestors might have had, they explained it in terms that were the only terms that they could communicate with. And since they couldn't write it on a piece of paper and it would last, they put it on a rock right at the place where it happened and said this is a place of some extraordinary circumstance.
Well, they actually may have been as technologically savvy as us. Look, if you just imagine that tomorrow the grid goes down, just imagine that. Okay, well, you can still use batteries that you've got for your video cameras, right? Okay, so you can videotape things that are going on. That's good. That's cool. Till those batteries go, and you've got no way at that point to recharge them. When the grid goes down, it's gone, and you can't recharge. Now, if that happened for an extended period of time, how would we record what normally we would record with video? How would we record that for future generations? Now, here we are, technologically savvy and no electricity. How would we record what we're seeing and what's happening to us for future generations? Couldn't do it with video. How would we do it? Well, of course, one of the best ways is chisel pictures of it in stone. That's one of the reasons, you know, you know Jeff Woolline, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
One of the reasons, one of the things I like about Jeff is something that he says all the time, is these petroglyphs, these are the videotapes. This is what they saw. This is what they experienced. They're trying to communicate that to us. And, you know, I think we would probably come up with some symbols that mean something. And it would be commonly known among us what those symbols mean. Just like road signs. You see a sign with someone, a picture of someone walking. It's got a circle and then a line through it. That means don't walk here. Now, we know that's what it means, but 1,000 years into the future, when they dig up one of these signs, will they know what that means, or will they say that's one of our religious symbols?
Well, sure. If they find a statue of Ronald McDonald, they're going to be looking at that like it's one of the gods that we worship.
Yeah, well, he is one of the gods some folks worship.
Yeah, true.
So now we've got these petroglyphs appearing really literally around the world, and they do mark places where there are measurable energy outflows.
That's right.
Now, this thing about energy coming from the sky, because they in their markings, in their petroglyphs, they do have a petroglyph, a spiral that ends pointed upward, and the interpretation of that by their descendants, modern descendants, is that that marks the place of a vortex in the sky. Okay, if that's the case, if it marks a vortex in the sky, where is that energy coming from? Now, we don't know exactly, but it's, I think, noteworthy that Dr. Levengood, who worked with Nancy, what is her name? Nancy Talton? With the crop circles? It came to the conclusion, and he's a biophysicist. He came to the conclusion that it is a swirling vortex of energy coming from up there that strikes the ground and causes these crop formations. Now, he's a very well-respected, noted scientist, and his answers don't tell us where that energy is coming from, other than it is from up there. Okay? Now, being from up there certainly could mean it's extraterrestrial, but it could also mean, couldn't it, that it's a natural occurrence from something happening in space?
You know, I don't really buy into that fellow's theory, because the complexity, it may be true, it's just that I don't think that I agree with it, but just my own personal thing. But I think that it's important to remember that energy is not too...
Jerry, we got caught by the break. We'll pick up there when we come back. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Jerry Wills, and we're talking about these energy vortices that do exist. We're talking about the ones that have been verified to exist, and you know, what's it all about? Now, Jerry, when we went to break, you were telling us that you don't agree with Dr. Levengood's theory on this. What is your theory?
Extraterrestrials coming down and creating the designs, but you know, I can't say that that's a fact either. It's just what I think.
All right, now let's talk about what's being measured with these meters. What's being measured is some sort of electromagnetic frequency. Some type of electromagnetic radiation, some type of electromagnetic frequency. Now, folks, you can do a real easy measurement. If you live anywhere near some high power lines, you know, that you see them up on the big towers crisscrossing the country. You can do some electromagnetic measurement yourself. It's not actually a measurement, but it's a verification. All you have to do is take a fluorescent tube, you know, fluorescent lights that are in a, you know, it's a tube. Walk up under one of those high power lines, and you know, they're many feet up into the air above you. But when you walk up under there and hold that tube up, it will light up. It's picking up electromagnetic frequency that's exciting the gas inside the tubes, or the tube, and it will light up. I'll tell you another thing you can do. For those of you out there, if you're a police officer, a firefighter, if you're military, or if you work in a job where you carry a walkie-talkie that's on the 800 megahertz band or 900 megahertz band. Take the fluorescent tube, hold it in one hand, lay the antenna on the tube, and then press the key to transmit. It will light the tube. The electromagnetic frequency, whatever it is, the electromagnetic frequency is coming up out of these places. In some places, it's quite strong, as you described at the doorway in Peru. And so it was strong enough that the people, you and the people with you, had trouble keeping your balance and had to sit down.
Right.
One of the things that has been discovered about a person being exposed continually or for a long extended period of time to high electromagnetic frequency, to strong electromagnetic frequency, is that it can have physiological impact upon you. It can make you nauseated. It can make you dizzy. It can make you hear voices. And so I'm wondering if a lot of the magical stuff that is said to take place at these sites may be being induced by the electromagnetic frequency interfering with the brain.
Oh, well, that's an interesting thought. I thought too much about that, mostly because it might be on such a subtle level. But I did do some experiments trying to create that kind of effect. I tested it on myself using strong electromagnetic pulses. And one of the curious things that happened was at a certain frequency, it sounded like everyone was talking underwater. It was a really odd experience. And the effects lasted for about 30 seconds after I turned off the device.
So it sounded to you as if everyone was talking underwater.
Underwater and buzzing.
And buzzing.
It was weird. Yeah, it was weird.
It's this same principle that is behind some of the mind control devices that have been developed. The early ones, and that, you know, we know about them. The early ones, they were able to beam a voice right into your head, transmit a voice, and just talk to you right inside your head. They were able to subliminally, without people hearing a voice, broadcast a command and get them to do it. And one of the early experiments with this took place in Russia and was witnessed by American, I don't know, scientists, agents, whatever. And that is where they simply sat inside a building and transmitted on this frequency out onto the street, bring us cake. And people started coming in and bringing cake. This is not something they heard with their ears. They heard no voices in their head, but the urge to bring cake into this building hit a bunch of people, and they started coming into the building and bringing cake into the building. Now, this is electromagnetic frequency. And the Earth itself is putting off electromagnetic frequency. And then various things on the Earth are putting off electromagnetic frequency. And then our technology for radio and television simply piggybacks something onto a frequency that's already there. So, for instance, if the radio station you listen to all the time is on 97 FM, if that station goes off the air, the frequency for 97 FM is still there. It has not gone away. The radio station, through its transmitter, is not creating that frequency. It's disrupting that frequency in a way that can be decoded into something that's audible for us. Does that make sense?
Oh, sure. Well, as an electronics engineer, I understand that comprehensively.
Okay. Here's the question then. Let's go down to El Castillo in Chichen Itza. And let's assume that picture of that beam coming up, that light beam shooting up out of the top of it. Let's assume that's for real. And I don't know. I do not know whether it's real or not. I'm not asserting that it is. But just for the example, let's assume that's real. Is and folks, you need to know the term. When the radio station disturbs that frequency at 97 FM, when they disturb that frequency, that's called modulating. They are modulating on that frequency. That means they are disturbing that frequency. Okay. Jerry, that shot of energy coming up out of that pyramid, is it the raw frequency, or is there something modulated on it?
Well, it depends on exactly what kind of frequency it is. I would suspect it's the raw frequency. The information, if there is any that's modulated on it, would be in a carrier wave. That's what that frequency is technically referred to as a carrier wave, because it's carrying something else.
Mm-hmm.
Since there's no way of knowing, I would suspect that you're just looking at the raw frequency, whatever, you know, the raw transmission. And I really doubt that it's frequency modulated. That's quite a task. So it would probably be an amplitude modulated burst, and it most likely is just a burst of accumulated energy, and it goes back out to the atmosphere. I think that's part of the reason why the pyramids were there in the first place, is because they accumulated from the earth and using capacitance.
All right, we have to step away for a break, and we will be back right after this break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Jerry Wills. We are going to open the phone lines in just a moment. We do have a caller on hold, so if you just hang in there, we'll get to you in just a moment. And Jerry, I want you to be able to finish what you had started.
Oh, golly, I forgot what I was saying.
Well, we were talking about whether there was any information on this frequency coming out of these sites.
Oh, yeah. The thing I was saying is basically that I think pyramids were accumulators of energy, and there were a number of different eddy currents and vortices that were going around inside the pyramid, I'm sure. And when it would reach a certain potential, it would release that potential into the atmosphere, and you would just see the energy released from the earth to the atmosphere. It was kind of a regulator of sorts.
Well, that's what has been observed at the Bosnian pyramids and has been measured. And if you go to their website, you can see the reports, the scientific reports on that, showing that at periodic intervals, kind of like Old Faithful, there's a burst of energy out of the top of the pyramid. So that certainly fits with what they've discovered. All right, let's go to the telephone, and let me tell everybody what our telephone numbers are. The telephone number, the main number here at the studio, is 623-444-5889. And you can call that number from anywhere on planet Earth. We have another number that's toll-free in the USA and Canada. That number is 888-223-4599. If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, I don't have a toll-free number for you, but I do have the flash message option on my website. You can go to my website, scroll down, you'll see Jerry's picture. To the right of that picture is a link that says flash message, and it's for those of you outside the USA and outside of Canada. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
Hello, Brent.
Hi, Jerry. How you doing?
Doing great.
It's kind of interesting you ended on pyramids because I'm curious. The pyramid I've been building for the past 4 months is finished. It works. If it's aligned perfectly with the north, with the magnetic fields of the Earth, uh-huh. I can sit in for less than a minute, and I get a slight tingling buzz all over my body. Now, my question is, can you create an artificial vortex? And if I'm taking some of this information off the guy who did the ley lines and the Ferris wheel or the merry-go-round at Disneyland, can you create an artificial vortex using a pyramid and amplify it by using ley lines?
Yeah, absolutely. What you'd want to do is you'd want to get probably some dowsing rods would be the easiest thing to do, and find where you have the greatest amount of energy. At that point, you'd want to put the pyramid, you know, right over where these lines are crossing, if you can find that. When I built mine, I didn't have a lot of room to move around. The yard was quite small. So what I set about to do was to try to figure out a way to actually accumulate even more energy into the pyramid than what I was experiencing. And I can tell you how to do this. It's a slight modification to the pyramid that you're building. Take, okay. I don't know how big your pyramid is, but mine was rather large. Take copper tubing.
Mine's 70 feet. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, well, I think mine was about 8. Take copper tubing and carefully work it into a ring, like a great big loop, like a big, huge copper hula hoop. You want that copper ring to fit down onto the pyramid from the top going down. And you want it to set at just about two-thirds of the way up from the ground. That's where I put mine, and I experimented with several different sizes until I got it right. At that point...
Mine is... I'll just describe mine to you real quick. I took some of the Russian research. It's a 73-degree pyramid. It's in my bedroom because I couldn't build it outside. It's a wooden core with copper inside and out. And it's got a crystal ball on top. It works pretty good, but I wish it was outside. Just kind of cold for
outside. Well, I'm a little bit curious, and I want to hear from both of you on this. When you say it works pretty good, what does that mean? What does it do, and why did you build a pyramid?
I built it because it helps me focus, because what it does is it creates a buzzing sensation throughout my body, and I can focus on that buzzing, that energy, if you will.
What's the benefit of that?
And I'm still working on it. I don't know what the benefit is, but the research that has been done in Russia and other places is that it has a beneficial this energy has a beneficial effect on anything that spends certain extended periods of time in it. For example, if you remember when you had a guy on, water will not freeze in a pyramid. And I'm just going to find out if that energy can be directed toward to help people, consciously directed, for example, to help facilitate healing in people who have given up on everything else.
Mm-hmm. Jerry, why did you build yours? What was that all about?
Well, because I had read a story about a guy in Turkey who had taken and then made a small wooden pyramid that was big enough to stick his safety razor into. And the joke that was going around was that if you put your razor blade in the moonlight, it gets dull immediately. And if you put it in this wooden block, solid wooden block that had a slot in it to stick the razor blade in all the way, that it would become completely sharpened again, magically. So I wanted to find out more about it. I got a book. I forgot the name of the book. It's in the other room in my library. And it talked about all kinds of things that you could do with pyramids. You know, making wine taste better, you know, so on and so forth. So I decided I was going to find out more about it. And I built a pyramid, and I figured, you know, it's just open-sided. It's four long runs of copper. I made it huge so I could get inside of it and not feel like it was small, because I'm not small. And I had a similar effect as Brent's talking about. It causes buzzing feeling. It was really pretty wonderful. I liked it a lot. But I wanted to do something even further, and so I designed this collector ring and experimented with where to place it. And when I did that, it brought in so much energy that I just really couldn't be in there for long. Nobody could.
So were you sitting in your backyard with because it makes wine better, did you sit in your backyard in your pyramid with a bottle of wine and a bunch of razor blades?
Oh, absolutely. And yeah. I also had cucumbers and tomatoes and a couple of dead cats. Because they petrify, you know, and that's an interesting thing to watch firsthand.
I see. All right. Well, Brent, you keep us posted on what happens with your pyramid experiments. I've read a bunch of stuff like what both of you are describing, but I haven't, you know, people talk about, oh, it creates this energy and everything, but they never talk about, yeah, so what? So what does it do for you?
That's what I'm experimenting with. Can it be consciously directed to like, I've got a neighbor with Hep C. I've got another neighbor with a back problem. I want to see if it can be used to help them.
Well, there you go. All right, keep us posted.
Yep.
623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. Toll free, 888-223-4599. And that's in the USA and Canada. The flash message option is open. And if you're outside of the USA or Canada, welcome your flash messages. And we'll gladly read them on the air if you've got a question or a comment. All right, one of the questions that I started out with is, what causes these things? And we have now moved into what do they cause. The pyramid is sort of a modification, an attempt to modify these frequencies. So in a way, it's kind of a pre-radio attempt to do some type of modulation of the frequency, isn't it?
Well, it seems like it might be. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, I think that for whatever reason, however they were managing to do it, they were using it as a collector.
Uh-huh.
It definitely has the ability to collect and to change things. The energy coming off the pyramid would be a secondary result of that and discharging that energy back into the atmosphere, I suppose.
All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Oh, hello, Kevin. It's Haya from Victoria, British Columbia.
Hello, Haya.
Hi. Hi, how are you? I have a few things to add to this.
All right.
We're talking vortices as well, right?
Yeah.
Just recently I had a radio interview by John Kelly, who outside of Vancouver. I don't know if you heard of him. He's reverse speech analysis.
Okay.
Okay, anyways, we were talking about the fact that I've been doing orb photography for the past, since 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed that where I am right now, because I've just moved 3 months ago, the same place, but just different building.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that what I'm getting is a much stronger signal. It's like the vortex is where I am, very close to where I am, like around the water area. And also, another thing I want to bring up is the fact I do have a small pyramid made out of glass and mirrors. And when I've done a clearing or I've worked on somebody, I have a selenite crystal one I put in there, or any other crystals I'll put in, and it rejuvenates it.
Hmm. When you say it rejuvenates us, what... Okay, Haya, did I understand you to say it rejuvenates us?
It rejuvenates the crystals.
Ah, okay. How do you know?
Because if normally most people will put their crystal after they used to clean it out on the window ledge in the sun to clean it. Well, I'll do that, but then after I've done it, I'll put it in the pyramid. What I find is that when I take it out of the pyramid, I find it's amplified. It's a lot more amplified when I'm working with it. I can actually feel the energy running off the crystal itself.
All right, how big is this pyramid?
From my my thumb to my middle finger, so it's about a few inches.
Uh-huh. So the size of the pyramid doesn't have anything at all to do with whether it will work or not.
You wouldn't think so, but it is actually exactly a pyramid, and it's open. You can open it.
Mm-hmm.
And I put a lot of my crystals in there and my different stones, and what it really does, it amplifies. And
you know,
it really helped.
The fellow that was sharpening razor blades.
Yes.
Turkey. He came to the United States and got a patent on the block shaped like a pyramid, and it was just a couple inches tall, big enough to stick the razor blade in. He sold them for a while. I guess people just didn't catch on with it, but it didn't matter how big it was. I think that maybe the larger they go, the more powerful they become. But, maybe that's because the larger they are, the smaller we become.
True, too. True. I find that I couldn't make a pyramid outside because I'm living in an apartment, even though I do have a balcony and I'm on the ground floor and I face the water, right? So what I have to do is I have to, improvise. So I find these small glass pyramids are great. You could put up to, like, I have a crystal ball, I put it in there. I have loose crystals, I put it in. And I'll put it in the other rocks, too. It'll also clear them as well. I find it's good for getting rid of negative energy if you're working with somebody who's been really, really sick.
Haya, have you noticed that being around this pyramid in any way enhances psychic abilities?
It can do with certain people. I've always had that type of ability.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I would probably say it does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would definitely say it would. And considering what it does with my equipment... And sometimes I'll put in feathers, because I work with feathers for clearing. If I'm doing clearing and I use, wheatgrass, or, you know, I'll burn sage or whatever. But what I'll do is I keep my grasses in there, and I find that they last a lot longer.
Okay.
And I find that they, when you burn them, they burn better and they smell nicer.
Wow. Okay, well, look, thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
All right. Bye-bye. Jerry, what she says plus something that you said earlier has brought up a question.
Sure.
You're talking about how these pyramids were apparently collecting and amplifying the signal, okay? So the frequency, all right? So here's the question, and Haya talks about that she said that it amplified the crystal's natural powers. Okay, I had asked, is there any information coming with these bursts of energy? Is there any type of information or data that's being transmitted? And you said what I think most of us would agree with, that it wouldn't seem that there would be. It's, you know, probably just the raw signal. All right, but if you're sitting in one of these pyramids or spend a great deal of time around it while it's giving these bursts of energy, is it possible that it's amplifying that person's psychic abilities, thus their telepathic abilities, thus the ability for one city, one community to telepathically communicate with another in ancient times?
Well, it's an interesting concept. I would imagine if you were in a specific area in the pyramid, you started, because this is how energy works as far as I know, you start resonating the energy around you and you start changing it. You change it with your thoughts, your emotions, your state of being. You put a person, for example, in the Queen's Chamber and put them into a specific state of being, that energy is being blown right out the top of the pyramid up towards the sky and who knows to where.
Mm-hmm.
The change in the energy caused by the person is going to have an influence upon what's contained within that energy leaving the pyramid.
Well, caller, we'll get to you in just a moment here. Hang on. What I'm wondering is if the human mind, in conjunction with those energies, does to those frequencies anything like a radio transmitter does to a radio frequency. Is it possible the human mind can modulate that energy so that it can be received hundreds or thousands of miles away by someone else who's hanging around a pyramid?
Well, it might not just be hundreds of thousands of miles away. It might be across the dimension of time itself.
Ah, okay. That brings up another question, but I'm going to the telephone line first. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Tracy from Canada.
Hello, Tracy.
Hello, Tracy.
I thought pretty much the same as Kevin. I've heard a lot about Kevin and was wondering, first of all, I thought it's odd. It looks kind of like a person in a prosthetic, and without the cap, it's like fingers.
Tracy, I'm going to get you to call us back. Your telephone is breaking up so bad I cannot understand what you're saying. I can hear your voice, but it's breaking up so bad I can't understand. So if you will, just give us a call back. Maybe we'll have a better connection. Jerry, if the mind can modulate that frequency to communicate across hundreds or thousands of miles, and you said perhaps across dimensions, is it possible that that is a form of Stargate?
Well, it seems like it would be in that respect. I don't know that you're actually transferring yourself, but being able to send and receive information across time or across great distances that's quite an accomplishment.
All right, I think we've got Tracy back, but let me check. Is this Tracy?
Yes, hi, Kevin. Any better? Can you hear
That's me? Better.
Okay, awesome. So I was just calling to say, I'm like you, I was wondering about if you can make some data that goes along with a fact. So I have MS. So basically, my signals from my brain to my body aren't getting through well.
Mm-hmm.
So I sat cross-legged after a test of impedance where they test electric signals mm-hmm. from your head to your brain. After that test, I sat cross-legged with my hands up, kind of like a pyramid top.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a pyramid is basically trying to copy what that would be like, a person sitting cross-legged, hands up.
Okay.
So, the second test, the signals were much stronger, and they went from my head to my feet, where they didn't before. And that was after 10 minutes of me sitting like that. So maybe that shape does something for impedance, for actual electric signals.
Interesting
Which
thought. What do you think, Jerry?
Brains work more functionally, your thoughts, all that stuff.
What do you think, Jerry?
Well, it sounds fascinating. You know, the thing that occurred to me immediately was that, you know, in the Queen's Chamber in the pyramid, which is where they see a lot of things go on, and what I said earlier about, you know, the bigger the pyramid, the smaller we become. In order to get an optimum amount of energy over the entire human body within an encapsulated area where all this energy, whatever it is being accumulated and it's functioning there, you'd need a large pyramid. Putting your hands up like that, the way that Tracy was describing it, you know, you're interacting with the energies, you know, these exotic energies that are around us all the time. So I'm not surprised that worked well.
And it's the same basic proportions, isn't it, Jerry?
Yeah, it is. I think so.
So, Tracy, basically what you're telling us is that you have medical verification that
100%.
You were improved by sitting basically in the shape of a pyramid.
Yes. Medical proof that helps electric energies pass through your body. So maybe they were making a machine that did the same thing.
Well, I think they probably were. And wouldn't it be interesting if the pyramids and the ultimate design for them was as a result of having discovered something such as you've discovered, only it was hundreds of thousands
they
of years
ago.
They
saw it and thought they should build one. It makes sense
sure.
to me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Yes.
I just wanted to pass that on.
Very interesting, Tracy. Thank you.
Glad you called back, Tracy.
623. Well, we have a break. I'll give you the number when we come back. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Jerry Wills. Telephone lines are open, and the telephone number is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. Toll-free in the USA and Canada, 888-223-4599. And, Jerry, we have a caller online, so let's go straight to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin, Jerry, Mike from Kentucky.
Hello, Mike.
You know, I was just kicking around some ideas here that possibly based upon the pyramid shape, because I explored these possibilities back in the 70s and 80s as well. Had my own little pyramid. Even at one time thought about building a pyramid garage, keep all the rust out of my car. But I didn't. So suppose that the reason there's no, that wasn't built as a burial chamber, and there's never been any indication that they buried a king in there, but maybe that's how they mummified their corpses, by taking them after they prepared them and laying them in the sarcophagus in the king's chamber. And it allowed, one, the body to mummify for after they left it there for a certain number of days, and two, it offered ascension to the heavens.
Well, that's quite an interesting idea. I'm not sure that I've heard that before. But, you know, I have a friend. His name is Larry Hunter. I think I'll pass that by him.
It just popped into my head, and I thought, wow, that sounds like an interesting idea.
Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously, the so-called King's Chamber was used for something. It was there for a reason. I think it's totally interesting that we don't have an idea, really, of what that chamber was for. In fact, we don't have any idea, other than speculations, about any of the chambers in the Great Pyramid. But you're right, it was not used for a tomb. There's no evidence it was ever used as a tomb.
Well, maybe that's why there's a queen's chamber. Is possibly because the kings during the mummification process were taken to the top, and the actual gender basis, the queens were put in the bottom. And because they know that they've found small animals dead within the pyramid that were mummified.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's what part of their mummification process.
Maybe. Hmm. Maybe. Mike, thanks for the call, man. Good to hear from you again.
Okay, you're welcome. Bye-bye.
I was thinking there are documentaries where scientists have figured out how the Egyptians mummified the bodies. And they've used cadavers. There's actually a documentary where you can see this, where they used a cadaver and mummified it using that process. And it did work. But who's to say that this other step might not have been part of the process? It may have been. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Tony from Denver.
Hello, Tony.
Hey, John. Hey, Jerry. Hey, Jerry. This March the 19th, the moon will make its closest approach to Earth in 18 years. What effect will be felt by us, if any?
Is it a full moon?
Yeah, but it's coming really close by.
Well, it's probably going to mean that there's going to be a lot of crazy things going on. You know, I don't know what it is, but it just really brings out some of the craziest stuff when it's full.
I had another one for you too, Jerry. You said the ET made the designs. What type of alien or human or gray, what do you think about the pyramid on Mars?
Well, you know, that's an interesting thing. The pyramid on Mars, five-sided instead of four. And there must be a reason for that. I don't know what the reason is, but it's just absolutely fascinating.
The thing about the moon and crazy things going on, you will read articles about full moons, and you'll read all these scientists that say there's no evidence of that. And let me tell you, that's nonsense. That's hogwash. Anyone who's ever worked in a jail knows if you're going to have trouble, it's going to be on a full moon. Anyone who works in an emergency room knows on the full moon, you're going to be inundated at the emergency room. It does have an effect. I don't know how, but it does have an effect. and it's verifiable by anybody that's ever worked in a jail, by anybody that's ever worked in emergency rooms during a full moon. They have increased numbers and increased crazy things to deal with.
Well, thank you. Great show tonight, guys.
Thank you, Tony. I appreciate the call. 623-444-5889. And that's the main number. And 888-223-4599 would be the toll-free number in the USA and Canada. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Ryan in Puget Sound.
Hello, Ryan.
Hello, Ryan. I wanted a good idea. Maybe we can try an experiment where Brent or somebody else with one of these pyramids can arrange them so that when the Belt of Orion comes into view, that if Brent could experiment with lining them up sort of like the pyramids in Egypt, to see if there's any effect on that.
That sounds like a pretty good idea. I think the difficulty for Brent is that, you know, because it's rather cold up there still, he's doing this in his home. You know, inside the house.
Does it make a difference, Jerry, if your pyramid is inside or outside?
I really don't think it makes any difference whatsoever. I just think, you know, if you're lining some pyramids up inside your house, it might be a little more difficult. You might have to move the couch out of the way.
Yeah, because, well, plus, you know, if you're inside, you can't see the Belt of Orion.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Yeah, well, I just thought it'd be an interesting maybe, well, if you had a lot of time and a lot of motivation, you could try and do a coral castle, but I'm sure I don't know if we have the technology to do that. But this interesting thought that I'm pretty sure there has to be some connection between the pyramid, at least the pyramid in Egypt, and the Belt of Orion. So I thought it'd be interesting to see what happens.
Well, yeah, actually, I think there's been research done that suggests that that's the case.
Yeah, one of the long shafts lines up with the Belt of Orion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you're right. Hawass is gone, and that is really going to change some things going on in Egypt.
I'll never forget, Jerry, when you went out down there to to the gateway there in Arizona, and you guys slept in your tent, and you experienced flying tent phenomenon, where you your tent got lifted in the air. Remember that?
Oh, my gosh. And you know something that I don't remember whether I mentioned or not, but our son was in a tent, Jordan was in a tent just adjacent to ours, probably about 10 feet away, and he kept hearing a sound like a cat, like how a cat has that purring in his throat.
Mm-hmm.
Only it was much deeper and much louder. We found out later that device that we had seen on the way through that canyon, that following that riverbed, that was there to take pictures of the Mexican jaguar that lived in that area.
So maybe he did hear a cat.
Oh, I'm sure he did.
Yeah.
And of course, that tent, I mean, the windstorm, that was nuts. No one around there had a windstorm.
All right. Ryan, thank you for the call. Interesting thoughts. We live in a paranormal universe. And folks, I say that without any woo-woo gaga stuff. The definition of paranormal is anything for which there's no scientific explanation. And that's almost everything in our universe. That means we live in a paranormal universe. There are things that happen that we have no scientific explanation for, and that's because our science is too primitive. But that doesn't mean these things don't happen. They do. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Kevin, Jerry. This is Rusty from Michigan.
Hello, Rusty.
Hello, Rusty. Hello. First thing, because energy is not destroyed, this energy coming out of these vortexes or whatever it may be, ley lines and stuff, what's happening with that energy?
Well,
because we're not tapping into it.
No, it's true. And you find that there are several people out there, hundreds probably, that are talking about the zero-point energy, that the atmosphere is charged with literally thousands, maybe millions of volts of electricity, but it's in stasis, in perfect balance between the top of the atmosphere and the surface of the Earth. When that energy is disrupted, you can tap into it. And that's what they're calling zero-point energy. You're right, energy is not destroyed. It's only changed. And these folks looking for zero-point energy are looking for ways to disrupt the atmosphere and drain off some of that excess energy through that disruption and change it into a usable form of electricity. When the capacitor goes out of balance over a particular area of the Earth, you have a lightning strike. And it either goes from the Earth to the sky or from the sky to the Earth. But that is that small microcosm going out of balance with everything else around it.
So, now, I know Kevin doesn't put much stock in the 2012 happenings, and Jerry, I think you put a little bit more emphasis on the 2012. Something happening as far as consciousness and that. Do you think that we are going to find out at that time, whatever this crossover point may be, you think these energies may become more active at that time, around the 2012?
Well, I think it's going to be like a pin on the map. I think what it's going to be is we're building up to it now. We're seeing all kinds of things happen, an expansion in awareness and the drive to take us to the next level of our reclaiming our rights as a person who's free, for example. You're seeing that in the Middle East. You're seeing it in a few other places in the world as well. And people are starting to become more aware and wake up. 2012 is not going to be a moment where suddenly a switch is thrown. That switch was thrown back in the 80s, and it's just been building ever since. 2012 is like the apex of a bell curve. And at that point, I think things that have been happening are going to reach a climax. But the end result is that I think it's just being a lot of destruction. And, of course, some destruction is necessary if you're rebuilding into something better and greater. That's Phoenix rising.
Okay, Rusty, thanks for the call. We have to step away for break. And we'll be back, folks, right after this. Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Jerry Wills, and we're talking about energy vortices. We know that there are places on the planet where they do exist, places where it's been verified with scientific instruments that they exist, and we're looking into the questions, okay, so what causes them, and what do they cause? Why are they there? What are they doing? It's a big mystery. I think you know, the theory that the pyramids, not just in Egypt, but, you know, pyramids are all over the world. And there's a theory that these pyramids act as sort of regulators, safety valves, if you will, to keep the earth energy in balance. If all this energy welled up inside the earth, at some point it would be so great that you could at least imagine that there would perhaps be a massive explosion of the planet. At least it seems that way to me. What do you think, Jerry?
Well, I don't know about an explosion of the planet, but I think it would certainly disrupt the balance, the harmonic balance of energy between the energy coming in from the sun, charging the atmosphere, and the energy that's within the earth. I've heard people refer to the pyramids as maybe being like those little balancing weights you put on a wheel. I don't know that that's the case. But I think there is some energetic purpose for them, and I think that there was probably a higher purpose that we're not even aware of yet. We're looking at something that is a flat picture, and it is actually a picture that needs to be looked at in several different perspectives in order to get a really good dimensional look at it. You know, if you had a collector out in space, for example, that was collecting energy from the sun and beaming that energy down onto the pyramid, what would that be doing to the pyramid? Maybe the ancients transfigured, or transliterated rather, that the energy from the pyramid was shooting up and that's where their soul was going and so on and so forth. What if the energy was being beamed down as a power source to power up the earth, to stabilize it? I mean, there's a lot of potential with different theories and different ideas like this. But the reality is we don't have any idea what they were doing. We can only take what's there and start imagining what could be done with the only pieces that are left.
Jerry, do you think there is a time in the future, either near future or far future, it doesn't matter, do you think there's a time when we're really going to figure out these energy vortices, where we're going to figure out the pyramids as well?
Well, you know, with Hawass gone, that time might be approaching, because there are a lot of things that have gone on in Egypt that are clandestine, and information has not been released. Things have been covered up for whatever reason. And with him gone, if things turn out that there's a successor who is more open, then perhaps we'll be able to find that information is available to us, and we can then dream the next part of the dream, go a little bit further with the information and imagine even greater things.
You know, on the one hand, you're talking about Dr. Zawi Hawass. On the one hand, I have a lot of respect for Zawi Hawass. And on the other hand, there are these stories of, you know, covering up information. Now, being a part of the cabinet, which he was the Minister of Antiquities, meant that he was part of the Mubarak government. And, you know, I don't know that this is the case. I don't know that this is the reason for the positions that he took on certain things and some of the things he did. But it certainly could be that he was not free beyond certain boundaries to say certain things or do certain things. One of the big, big sources of income for Egypt is tourism. And so perpetuating the standard Egyptologist story of Egypt was necessary, you know, for tourism. But I think if there really is something extraterrestrial about the Great Pyramid, if there really is something, if it's not extraterrestrial, then antediluvian high-tech about the Great Pyramid, if that's the case, I think letting that information out will increase the tourism. I think, you know, if they let the information out that, hey, you know what, this has been covered up a long time, but here's the deal. There was a high-tech civilization that built the Great Pyramid many, many years, thousands of years before the Egyptians had evolved into a civilization. And we have certain pieces of that technology that we've never revealed before. Let me tell you, there's not enough hotels in Egypt to contain the people that would flock there to see that.
Well, yeah, that's true. But, you know, one of the things that occurs to me is that if they were finding extraordinary riches and it was being secreted away to the people in power, they wouldn't want people to know about that. And if they were to find hugely technological devices, technologically advanced things, like a Vimana, for example, from, you know, you hear about those from Vedic literature.
Uh-huh.
You know, if they found something like this, then that would cause quite a problem, really, because if they found this technology, now there's going to be a lot of people descending on Egypt to try and control it in order to have access to that technology. It's a very dangerous situation.
That is true as well. But, you know, it would be possible for them to keep that sort of technology secret, not tell us about that, while telling us about whatever else they found. You know, it's demonstrable that the Egyptians did not build the Great Pyramid. That's demonstrable. And the debunkers who keep coming around and saying that it was done by all these slaves pulling these huge blocks on logs, these guys, you know, there's a very easy way, a simple way to prove that's not true. And that is, okay, guys, you do it. You build one.
Yeah, exactly right. But, you know, one of the things I was telling you earlier today when we were having a talk about this fellow Larry Hunter, and one of the things that he showed me that just made my head was that there is a salt line, a high water line on the pyramid, and that at 220 feet above sea level, as I remember him telling me, could be off on that, but not much, there are barnacles, sea creatures that are encrusted onto some of the areas that they're uncovering now. So it's showing that the pyramids were underwater. And the last time that happened was millions of years ago.
Jerry, I wish we had more time, but we're racing towards the end of the show. I want to thank you for being with us this evening.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and get Larry Hunter on your show. I'll get a hold of him for you.
Okay, sounds good. Ladies and gentlemen, Jerry Wills, the vortices are out there. There is truly some woo-woo stuff being said about them. But then, again, there's some strange stuff that they really do, and it's measurable and verifiable. What's it all about? At the beginning of our show, the song says, "You don't know why." And that's why we're here. We don't always get to the answer, but we sure are in the hunt. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time. So long, everybody.